I'm Katie, mom to two littles and four angel babies.
And I'm Sarah, an advocate for moms and children of all backgrounds and family types.
With two PhDs between us and collective decades spent unraveling how society shapes women's experiences, we're here to shred the rule books and their relentless tide of expectations. In this safe space, the complexities of motherhood find the candid, unfiltered voice. We're Undefining Motherhood, one conversation at a time. Pregnancy and postpartum are some of the biggest life transitions that we can go through. And sometimes life still throws us these major wrenches to make them even harder. We're talking today about what do we do in those times? How do we support each other? What does that look like? I am so excited to introduce today's guest. Allie Garfinkel is my neighbor who has an incredible story that I actually have never heard before. I know bits and pieces and have intentionally saved it to hear on this podcast today because I know it's going to be transformative for so many of our listeners at understanding the experiences of motherhood and empathy and community support. Allie, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So I'm from Atlanta. I have two children now, Poppy, who's 4.5, and Jet, who is almost 1.5. And I think my journey started like most others. I was lucky to get pregnant pretty quickly and had like a hard pregnancy, but it wasn't attributed to anything besides for, oh, you're pregnant.
Right.
I had a C-section with my daughter and all of that went very uneventful, normal, fine. And after I had her, I started, instead of getting better, I started getting sicker. And a lot, you know, some of it's mental.
Postpartum, right?
Undiagnosed anxiety.
Yes.
Depression. What is it? Like the postpartum blues.
The postpartum blues, but they only last for 2 weeks. And
mine
so then you're
a little bit longer.
You're like, wait a minute, what's happening?
Exactly.
And you're always questioning yourself. Mm-hmm. Like that time is, it's so hard under the most normal of circumstances.
Sure. And you know, you can be prepared, but I definitely wasn't prepared. So,
yes,
new mom, crazy first-time mom, all of the above. But then I just started to not feel great physically. I developed a cough. So I remember it was my daughter was shy of 2 months, and I was kind of bouncing between the GI doctor, the ENT doctor. You know, could it be reflux? Could it be this? Could it be sinus related?
And like shy of 2 months— you had a C-section. So at this point, you have, your stomach is still extremely tender.
Oh, yeah.
Your scar is still healing. Yep. It's not even actively healed yet. Like, you are in those moments where, like, you're just maybe coming off of some lifting restrictions, but you have to be very careful what you do with your body. So, like, real raw time. In the biggest transition of your life, I think, especially that going from zero to one, is the the biggest ideological shift we go through. You know, we talk about the word matrescence. It's like adolescence after you have a baby. It's the same level of hormonal shift, the same level of ideological transition, and yet you're doing it without all the support. And then you're having to also balance doctor's appointments and so many other things. So I'm okay.
No. You're so right. So it's like, so I'm like a hypochondriac anyways. So I just was obsessed with trying to figure out what it was. So I did rounds of antibiotics and medications for months. And it was at the end of my maternity leave and I just still felt awful. I had a cough. I was short-winded. I couldn't speak without, like, finishing sentences without just coughing a ton. So I asked my primary care. Well, I made an appointment and asked if they could do an X-ray because I thought I had pneumonia. And it's kind of a parallel story because in that same week, I also was laid off from my job.
when you were supposed to be returning from maternity leave, yeah, you were so laid off.
Yeah. And there was a big layoff unrelated. You know, I was right. affected because other people were. So, right. and it was a small company. And in my role, there was nowhere to shift or right. a parallel role to go to. So that's just, you know, the business wow. of working in a, you know, corporate yeah. America. So that actually came first in my story. And then I went to my doctor a few days later and had them do an X-ray. And I went home. And I got a call from the nurse initially and said it looked fine, you know, preliminary. And that was on a Thursday. And then the next day I got a call from the radiologist and said they found a mass. And I did not know what that meant.
Right.
And I told I told my mom and I told my dad and my stepdad and everybody. And everyone's like, well, like, it could mean a lot of things. We don't know. So they had scheduled a CT the following week. And I just remember that weekend Googling, and the word cancer showed up.
Of course it did.
And I'm like, well.
The word cancer always shows up.
For every, it's like.
And
it's,
that's the tricky thing. Like, we tell people, everything, right? don't Dr. Google because your headache will always right. be cancer.
Everything will be cancer.
But then sometimes it is.
Then sometimes it is. And I remember it didn't really register because I was like, oh, it could be anything. Like, why would it be cancer? Who gets cancer? I was 33 at the time. And we went through the motions and I had my CT scan. And my stepdad is a radiologist at the hospital at like a remote one. And he read the report with the radiologist on site. And I guess the joke about radiology is, you become a radiologist so you don't have to deliver a diagnosis. And he walked, I just remember, I think I was in like really good spirits. Nothing like stuck. And I remember he walked out and I was standing with my mom and he could not look at me. And he said he couldn't look at my mom. So he's just looking at the floor and he goes, you have a form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he said it very monotone. It was like, I'm having a sandwich for lunch. Like, it was so monotone. And I heard him and I was like, oh, can I like go get a Diet Coke from the vending machine? It just like didn't even register. And my mom like, you know, went to 0 to 100. And from there, you know, we just pretty much kicked it into gear. And within a couple weeks, I had biopsy. I had a port placement. I had an army put in place. I saw the oncologist. I saw a secondary one. A lot happened. And I would say this was how surreal it was. This is the story my husband tells. Like a week after I was diagnosed, I was scrolling on Facebook, which I really don't recommend if you have a trauma.
Don't recommend social media at all.
Social media is a good break to take then, yeah.
Totally. A girl I know posted and it was like, I know a family who was looking for a nanny ASAP. They have a 3-month-old and the mom was just diagnosed with cancer. And I read that to my husband and I was like, oh my God, somebody has the same story as us. We should get to know them. And then I come to find out it was us.
Oh, my God.
And it was like just how out of body.
Yes.
And we were sitting there saying like, man, that sounds like really sad. And then we realized this story is us. People, you know, the network of the network of the network were trying to help us find a nanny very quickly. I had no idea.
Right.
This person was even involved. And it was so thoughtful. But like I'm reading this story like. And reading the comments before I even realized it was me.
Right. Like
this is my story.
You're almost disassociating as completely. A coping mechanism. And, and I think that's part of shock, right? Clearly, you were still in shock. And that's
pretty
part
much
of
the whole time. Yeah.
Pretty much the whole time. So how old was Poppy when you got the formal diagnosis?
She was just turned 3 months old. Yeah. So that, like, you'll probably, if I cry, it's really my children. I'd say the hardest part of it all was like, since she was born, really, I wasn't able to be a mother.
Yes.
I didn't really know how to be a mother when you have to like take care of your health first. And from the point of diagnosis through chemo and everything, I couldn't mother. When I got my port, I couldn't hold her. It hurt so bad to hold her. because the port placement.
Yes.
I was so weak. They could put her in my lap in bed and we would lay there and watch TV, but I couldn't feed her. I couldn't change her. I couldn't do the middle of the nights. I sat a lot of the time and we had an amazing nanny and I watched her play with my daughter. And I watched, you know, our family raise her. And I'm grateful for the army that we had. But I would say, like, I carry that guilt to this day of 6 months of her life that I missed.
But, you know, something I want to iterate about what I hear you saying.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about undefining mm-hmm. motherhood, right? And you're saying, I couldn't mother mm-mm. because I had to take care of myself first. Yep. And the truth is, you were mothering.
Because I would say she, so this, I believe in all these things. Her astrological sign is Cancer.
Oh.
So she truly had to be born to save my life.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't, I mean, I, finding out, you know, postpartum that I had cancer through my pregnancy is like a mind.
Oh, my gosh, I can't fathom
really
it.
Hard to process. But yeah, she had to be born to save my life. And we started chemo. I had a very unique chemo. It was called our EPOC, and it was a 96-hour infusion. So I checked into basically the hospital on a Monday, like it was a hotel, but it wasn't. And I checked out on a Saturday. I was there. I was hooked up to a chemo bag for 5.5 days straight. So I left her for 5.5 days straight. I couldn't see her. And that's when I truly had to let others
yes.
raise her. And I sat in a hospital bed for a million hours. And people would visit and stuff. But that became the routine for 6 rounds of chemo, was checking in on a Monday and checking out on a Friday night or a Saturday. And it was a job. We had it down to, so speaking about work, it was never right at that point an option to go back. That was on the back burner. And my job was to be Cancer. I had to make it to her first birthday. And we had it down to a science. I had, because where the port is and where I didn't want to waste 1 minute. And I know this sounds gross, but I didn't shower that whole week because it would have taken an hour delay off my treatment, which means I would have had to be in the hospital 1 hour longer. And there's not enough Xanax to survive that week. And shower, I had 5 outfits. Every day I changed into an outfit when they changed a bag. And I just counted down hour by hour, day by day until I could go home. And then thankfully I was home for 2 weeks. But then that Monday, I was back at the hospital.
Back at the hospital. And yeah. You went through how many rounds of that?
6 rounds. About came out to 6.5. It came out to almost 30 nights in the hospital total.
Wow. And I mean, you're at she's at the age at that point where you leave for the hospital and you come home and she's different.
I missed her first Halloween. Thankfully, I was home for my birthday and we were home for Thanksgiving, but I missed Thanksgiving because I was in bed because I couldn't move. because chemo is chemo. And while I tolerated it well enough, mm-hmm. I still lost my hair. I still wasn't able to do a lot of things. And, you know, my accomplishment for the day was walking to the mailbox.
Yes.
If I could walk to the mailbox, that was a great day. If I could eat a bagel, that was a great day. So, you know, perspective, and it just changed everything.
Perspective is really key there. And mm-hmm. I hope that's something that people are hearing in this because— You know, we all have different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've talked a lot about how I feel like I missed a lot of Jack's newborn stage as well due to postpartum anxiety. Mm-hmm. I was physically there and I was physically doing the work, but I was not mentally there. But you're speaking to something so integral right now, which is we need to be willing to adjust our expectations and set them for ourselves for what has been given to us. And
totally.
What was given to you was just, wow. That's so much.
These are the cards that I was dealt. And I know it's pretty messed up to lose your job and get diagnosed with cancer in the same week.
Uh-huh. While you're 2 months postpartum, yeah, 3 months postpartum.
3 months postpartum. Uh-huh. And it's funny because I'll fast forward for a second. It's like now with my son, I'm having like postpartum hair loss. And I'm like, wait, I never went through this with my daughter because I didn't have hair. I lost my hair. And I never knew what postpartum was like because I never went through it. I went pretty much into chemo.
That is such – so when you think of things now like postpartum hair loss, is it – Is that triggering in a way because it's hair loss?
Very much so. Yeah. I'm so hyper aware to things.
Yeah.
And I lived, you know, I'm 4 years in remission. And for a very long time, I lived scan to scan.
Yes.
Like if my scan was good, I'm good for 6 months. I can live life for 6 months. And then the next scan would come and your fate could change in a minute. And
yes.
It just... in a reading by a radiologist. And that's how I lived my life for a very long time. And when I got pregnant with my son, I could not get a scan. And that it was a lot of anxiety to manage undiagnosed because, you know, you sit here, my cancer was not something I could see. So right. I had to believe that it was working. And I had to believe that right. I had it from these doctors. And I think with other cancers, you know, like breast cancer, you feel it and it's removed and it, you know, might not totally be, but you know something is taken out yes. of you. With mine, it melts away. With yes. lymphoma, it's like the insulation you spray in your attic, it fills in gaps around your organs. So I had a cough because it was pushing on my lungs.
Wow.
So I just had to believe that things were happening without actually seeing or feeling right. like what was going on.
Right.
So.
Wow. And so it is so interesting to me because lymphoma and I think of as a blood cancer.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting that there was nothing you could do with blood work to determine.
So it did. Cell counts were higher.
Okay.
And that definitely was affected. So now I'm monitored every 6 months with lab work.
Yes.
For a very long time.
Uh-huh.
But that's like kind of the first approach, like first line of defense.
Okay.
The lab
work. So were they able to do that when you were pregnant with Jet?
Yeah. I still had my lab work. And, you know, you can get scans if, you know, needed.
Right.
Thankfully, there wasn't a need. But if my lab work showed something that was concerning, it was, you know, worth the risk to make sure nothing was going on.
Right.
And then once I had Jet, I had my, which ended up being my last scan for forever until, you know, God willing for forever. Mm-hmm. I had that and that was clean. So that was, it's like jumping off a ledge. It's like today you have cancer and then tomorrow you're in remission. Like, how do you process
right.
that shift?
Yes. How do you process that shift? When you're already processing so many, like you've been processing shifts since Poppy was born. I mean, the shift to becoming a mom and having a living, breathing human like for the first time is insane alone.
Yeah.
And then the identity shift that comes losing your job and then this diagnosis on top of it. How did you cope with that? Did you ever find anything that supported you through coping with that? Or was it just such a, like, you just have to survive and you learn to cope later?
I think, like, Xanax helped a lot.
Yes. yes. I mean, when we need mental health medication, we need it. And I can't fathom how much you needed it at that time.
I needed a lot. I would say, I know this is going to sound really weird, but when I was in remission, a week later, COVID hit. And I had gotten my port out and then days later, so we were terrified because I was still immune compromised.
Right.
And I was in remission, but days out of, you know,
right.
all of that. And I would say for me, the silver lining of COVID was that the world slowed down so I could catch up. And when you are diagnosed with cancer or trauma or go through fertility issues or whatever it is, you feel like your life is frozen and it's on pause,
yes.
but the world keeps moving on and you feel lost. You don't know how to catch up. Like everybody forgot about you.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of that self-pity and self-doubt because it feels like everyone moves on. I became
yes.
the cancer friend to people and that wasn't like the title I wanted. I just wanted to be Allie. And there's people that showed up in a way that made me just feel like, you know, your best friend from college or friends I made after that, you know, some don't even know really the story, or they met me during COVID when I didn't really have hair, but like they didn't care. Like I was just Allie. Nobody cared that I went through this thing or I'm a different person. Like they just accepted me and they helped me through and they gave me a sense of normalcy of just banter and crying because I'm so thankful for them.
Can you imagine hearing the three words, you have cancer, ever? But especially during a terrifying time in your life as early postpartum. Unfortunately, cancer is a reality that hits most of us, whether directly or through a loved one. Nearly 40% of Americans will be diagnosed at some point in their lifetime. And I've actually held off on releasing this episode until I was emotionally prepared because I've been grappling with the terror and grief incited by my own dad's recent cancer diagnosis. This is why, friends, I am so grateful to Allie for vulnerably being a voice for millions impacted by this awful disease. But let me tell you a tiny piece of positive news. Survival rates are rapidly increasing thanks to incredible new research that's developing breakthrough treatments for all different types of cancers. For years, I've done volunteer work with Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or LLS, who's helped fund 70% of the FDA-approved blood cancer treatments since 2016, many of which have also gone on to be found to treat other cancers as well. I've also had the chance to connect with so many families just like Allie's, and they all need the kind of support she talks about in this episode. I've seen LLS provide family support, patient advocacy, co-pay assistance, and funding for travel for medical care and clinical trials. And that's why today I am asking for your help, friend. Every dollar counts in the fight against cancer. So whether you're able to donate $1 or $100, I hope you'll visit undefiningmotherhood.com/LLS to support families just like Allie's, to fund more research, to save more lives, to change the world. That's undefiningmotherhood.com/LLS. Thank you for your support and for changing lives. Okay, so you were cancer-free, you were in remission. How old was Poppy when you were officially in remission?
She's 8 months old.
8 months old. Oh, yeah. Wow. So you can be in remission fast in limbo.
So okay. I got really lucky. We were given two options. And it makes me think of The Matrix with like the red pill or the blue pill.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, which one do you want?
Yes.
So we went the very aggressive route, the one that would hit you hard, but had better results.
Yes.
And since, you know, they say with cancer, the younger you are, the more you can tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did. And I was in remission. I finished my last chemo on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
And then I had my scan a couple weeks later, and it was gone, or there were no markers for it. So that was, and that's why I say you fall off a cliff. That was it.
That was it. Okay.
You were in remission. You had cancer, and now it's, you don't.
Wow.
It's a mind game.
That is such a mind game. And then, but of course, you're symptom spotting, and you're wondering, and you're checking it. Okay. So, mm-hmm. Whew.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, kind of two parallel questions, because I think these, they're different, but they also go with each other. One, how did your experience of motherhood shift being able mm-hmm. to, I mean, your body still had to recover and heal from all the chemo, but being able to slowly become more involved. And then also, you ended up having another child. What did this look like in determining, are we going to have another child? How do we time that? What does this look like? Just tell me about all the things.
Okay, so I'll start with the first question. So, like I said, COVID being the biggest silver lining, that gave me that time.
Yes.
I'm so grateful for what COVID did for our family because I spent 24/7 with her. And while, you know, I had a lot of mental health things.
Of course.
And a lot of fear. And I just remember, like, my husband had to put her in the stroller for me to actually take her on a walk because I was so scared. And to this day, and I'm so scared to work out. And I, yes. that's a residual thing. I'm so scared to do something to my body because I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, like, wow. I know I need to work. I love working out, but, like, I haven't really besides for walks because it's just this looming fear that, like,
yes.
you move wrong, you do something wrong, you change your body, what's going to happen?
Wow.
So while living in that fear, though, COVID allowed us to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
So that was the beautiful kind of
the silver lining.
The silver lining, the beautiful and the chaos.
It's so interesting for me to hear this perspective, just so you know, because I have said to John so many times, my goodness, they're so good about getting out for their walks. Like, it doesn't matter how cold it is.
It's mental.
It doesn't, like, I see either you or your husband out walking Jet all the time. And I'm not even home that often. So I'm like, it's so interesting to hear, like, you had to reclaim that and the walk is mental health, but also you're afraid of it. I never would have envisioned this because I have commented so many times. I'm like, wow, they get that baby out. Like, I wish we had that discipline.
Now, I have never told anybody this, but I just remember in the early days of walking really saved my life. I remember thinking, like, I would literally, this made me cry, but I would literally say to myself, because of how physically terrible I felt from recovery, like, there's so much aftermath people don't know that comes with going through chemo. I literally was like, if I die from this walk, at least I tried. I tried to be a good mom. I tried to do something for myself. So that makes me cry. But so that's, like, what I would think when I go on walks, which is pretty traumatic and pretty extreme, but, like, I'm trying.
Right.
So we love walking.
You love walking. And that's not extreme. That's actually the perfect thing for us to think about as moms in any kind of struggle, in any kind of trauma. Earlier this season, we talked with Eve Rodsky and we talked about unicorn spaces and finding this mythical space that doesn't exist where you can be with yourself. And
that's
what walking became for you. And at different periods in life, sometimes it is that simple.
Mm-hmm. And it shifted a little bit later. And so that's what it did for Poppy and me, is COVID really allowed us to bond.
Yeah.
And connect. On the my son's side of it, we had the option to freeze eggs before mm-hmm. treatment. And Dr. Toledo at RBA is a really close friend, and he was on my doctor team, and
that's my fertility clinic as well. Different doctor, same clinic.
He advised me along with my oncologist that my type of cancer didn't attack my ovaries, and I took Lupron, so I was put into menopause. So I just sweat the whole time.
Yes, yes.
But I went into menopause for chemo treatment. So we decided not to do egg retrieval because, one, I was terrified to delay chemo.
Absolutely.
And the risk was low for fertility issues. With that said, years out, my AMH level was very, very low. I ended up having less than a 5% chance to get pregnant. So when we were ready to start looking at what that meant, I talked with Dr. Toledo, and I did research, and we had, I would say March of 2022, we had an appointment set up with his clinic I did preliminary lab work, and he would not put me through IVF because of my cancer.
Right.
And why would I do something else to my body that
could
cause who knows what?
Right. It comes with so many hormones, and
it's just,
there's so much that happens here. People don't understand how traumatic IVF really is on the body. It's very difficult.
And I had to get tons and tons of shots and injections in the hospital. I had to get a shot in my stomach every day, like so much around just the port. It just was not, it was not a good situation. So we decided that we would look into the egg donor surrogacy route.
Okay.
And he, that's what I was working with him. Granted, it's like a bottomless pit of money. And
yes, it is. Yes, it
really
is.
Really expensive. And I don't, you know, we had to get the information and go through that and decide, you know, we ultimately were kind of on the track that, listen, we have a healthy child And that's what God gave us. And we are happy with that. This isn't, you know, there wasn't a need, like I had to have two kids.
Right.
No, we have a healthy child. I survived. I'm healthy. Like, why would we do anything to
absolutely
disrupt that?
Yeah.
And also financially, it just did not make sense.
Right.
Thankfully, I did get pregnant with my son, and it was during another traumatic time. We found out a few months prior that my dad had pancreatic cancer. Yeah, this is a tough one. So I became his caregiver. My brother and I divided and conquered, and my brother kind of managed the business side of having cancer, which if anyone has been part of that, there's very much a business side to it, a
so interesting
financial side, an insurance side,
yeah,
appointments. It's a lot to manage. And he took on that, and I took on the emotional, physical component because I wasn't working. And my dad moved in with me. He lived in our basement. And his journey was a lot rougher and tougher. And my daughter was along for the ride with me with it, watching him. And I got pregnant with a boy. And we have five girl, or at that, it was, in our family, we have five girl cousins. But on my side, my brother is two girls. And I had Poppy, so he's the first boy. And I was able to tell him I was having a boy. And so I think that, and we, my son's middle name is after him. And I think that in the beauty of trauma, there's always silver linings. Yeah. And what I learned most about that is that it's way harder to watch someone go through cancer than it is to be the one going through.
Oh, wow.
And that, I think that relates to every mom. It's so hard to watch someone going through something.
Yes. That you can't fix.
That you can't fix. And I think for me, when I got my diagnosis, it was a relief. I was so relieved that there was something we could try and fix.
Yeah. To have an answer. People in the fertility community say that when I went through recurrent miscarriage, I said that it's so weird to go to the doctor for a test desperately hoping they find a problem.
100%. I wanted something that medicine could cure, not chemo, but you know your body and you know there's something and you know there's a reason. And granted, I wouldn't want that could kill me, but there was so much weight lifted.
Yes.
When I finally knew there was a reason. I wasn't a hypochondriac anymore. I wasn't crazy.
And you never had been.
I drove my doctors crazy trying to figure out. But,
and you never had been, and you had been made to feel like you were, but like, you weren't.
And it wasn't just mental health. There was something real. And I think that's such a big takeaway is you have to listen to your body. If you think something's wrong, you have to get it checked out.
And this is, this is the reality of healthcare for women in America. It's the reality of healthcare for everyone in a system that's overtaxed and overburdened, but especially for women where we do have this history. I mean, we come from a history of the word hysteria and just being diagnosed with hysteria because your uterus is causing these hysterical problems that you're imagining. And no doctor is going to diagnose that anymore. Thank goodness. No doctor believes that. But we still have the generations of these beliefs slowly passing down where we know we have evidence that shows that doctors take invisible symptoms from women less seriously. And so you had to be that advocate for yourself.
100%. I was told that if I didn't push for that x-ray, typically doctors take about 6 months before they would really do something. And I think you have to be an advocate. Like, nobody's going to do that for you. Nobody feels what you're feeling. And if something's not working, I mean, in postpartum, like, all the changes in your body, like, still, I'm 16 months out, and there's still, like, you still think, like, wait, what is going on?
Yes.
I mean, and you have to be an advocate
for yourself. You have to be an advocate for yourself. And you shouldn't have to be, but you do.
You do.
And so then when your dad was diagnosed, your brother kind of took over that advocacy role, it sounds like. Yeah. But that means, okay, so you God, it's just so many shifts because one, you're now parenting your parent.
It's that sandwich generation.
It's the sandwich generation.
Too young to be in that.
Too young to be in that. And at the same time, still recovering yourself.
100%.
And at the same time, still trying to find time to bond with and care for your young daughter. You already feel like you missed time with.
Yeah. I still do. I've had so much time with my son, like, because I've been at home with him every second of his life, present, healthy, able to do everything.
Yeah.
And it was the opposite with my daughter. And there's so much guilt. Like, she doesn't understand, but I know she subconsciously sees it.
Yeah.
And it tells me that, like, and I know we go through guilt with kids because everybody wants your time and attention, but that, it's hard. So we made it fun for my daughter when my dad was living with us. I would say it was triggering when I took him to the chemo lab and just hearing that. I don't know if you heard a chemo bag run out, but there's this beep that haunts you and it's chilling. And he looked at me and he was like, just get out of here. And I was like, I love you. Bye. I'll pick you up. It's just this beep and it just haunts you. And he passed I was there and it's weird, but I was there and I got to say goodbye and he got to feel my son. I think that's the biggest silver lining are the silver linings when you go through fertility or loss or illness or trauma, whatever it is, there's always something beautiful in the disaster.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so important for us, I think, to understand that there's beauty in the disaster, and it's amazing to be able to find that beauty. And it's also okay when you can't yet find that beauty, when we're not yet ready, we're not yet there. Because I do think, you know, we get so uncomfortable talking about other people's trauma and struggles that we push people to look for that silver lining. And that's not fair to the person who is struggling, who is grieving. But then when you are able to, how beautiful is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's taken me 4+ years to actually be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And now, like, you see me on walks. I walk to the cemetery to see my dad with my son. That was my postpartum recovery, was walks with my son to see my dad.
Oh.
We would talk to him, and he, like, so when I say my dad's name, my son waves. It's beautiful, right? So I didn't know what that would look like, but you create it.
Yes.
And that's postpartum, how I figured out how to heal through walks.
Again. Oh, my goodness. Through walks again. Yeah. Walking has been your your real saving grace.
Yeah. And everybody has something. And I think it's important to find, even I'm a stay-at-home mom right now, and it's chaos and you have no time.
But it's such chaos.
You have to find what your thing is. I don't care if it's like a shower during the day and not at night. Like, whatever that thing is, you have to find what's going to keep you sane.
Those moments that keep you sane and that refresh you.
Yeah.
So I think an opportunity we have to really support moms here, because, you know, one thing that's jumping out at me about so much of what you're saying is how there has not been a moment without tumult, when the ground didn't feel like it was not being pulled out from underneath you in some way, from basically Poppy's birth to now.
Mm-hmm.
It's from one thing to another, which, I mean, I don't want to sound like the eternal pessimist here.
It's reality.
I tell my friends all the time, I feel like this is adulthood.
It sucks.
Like,
I don't want to grow up.
And for some people, it's life. And I am fortunate enough that I grew up with parents who I guess just shielded me from a lot of it.
I did too.
And in a way that made it harder to learn to cope with, but in another way, like how beautiful that I got to have that time where I think it's only adulthood where many people listening think, no, that's just life.
Yeah, I think that like cancer detection, at least, it's so much younger now.
Yes.
It's like, it's scary how many
people. It's really scary.
We know that, but it's amazing too because they're getting treatment earlier and the longevity of life is there.
Yes. Well, and we have so many new treatments.
Yeah, and every day there's something coming out on the news, a trial this or that.
Exactly. And I mean, that's, you know, we even though you're my neighbor, we kind of connected for this through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, the work that I do with them is because of that and because they are amazing at funding so much research. And also actually, and this is when I got started with them originally, it was in honor of my cousin who passed away of childhood leukemia, who I never knew. He was he was older than me, so I never knew him. And so I was given the opportunity to be involved, and I did that in his honor. But then I actually was diagnosed. So after I had Jack, I was diagnosed with common variable immunodeficiency. And it's a genetic immunodeficiency. I give myself immunoglobulin therapy every week. But part of what that means is that I'm at a greatly increased risk for lymphoma.
Oh, wow.
And so that also
as a tie-in
keeps me very involved. And then I'm like, if I it's not the experience that you have. I don't symptom spot the way you do. It could be that this is never a thing, and it could be that this is a thing, you know, in 60 years. Mm-hmm. God willing, I'm still alive. And that math doesn't add up. But, you know, I think it's ultimately, you know, we want to do what we can do to help prepare the world to have these treatments and have earlier intervention, have better resources. Completely. But also, I think something we can do actively now is we can understand how to support people. You know, you talk about how this village just rallied around you. Mm-hmm. And like, what does that look like? If we talk a lot at Undefining Motherhood about how to build a village and a support system when you're pregnant, looking forward to being postpartum. But then when you have this added layer of trauma.
Yeah.
And then with Jet, that postpartum involves part of your village now being gone.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. So what does that look like? What was that community of support for you? What were the things that were just standout moments as supportive and helpful?
I would say when I was diagnosed, my husband and I made a decision to be vocal and share. And I think a lot of people would keep it quiet, which I understand too.
Absolutely.
But I told my husband, Mark, I was like, I can't suffer alone. I can't do this in silence. Postpartum was in silence. I didn't reach out for help.
Mm-hmm.
My mom literally hired a nurse from New York to live with us to help for a week and a half because I didn't ask for help, and it got so bad.
Yes.
I was so bad.
Is this with Jed or with Poppy?
With Poppy, I needed help. I couldn't physically feed her. Like, I just mentally was so in a drain. So we decided early on that we're going to be outward about it. Not asking for, like, a GoFundMe or anything, but just see what happens.
Yes.
See what sticks. And, I mean, the community showed up in a way that was just unbelievable. They took it on themselves to raise some money for medical bills. And I would say something like a meal train, knowing at least with cancer, there are certain meal restrictions, but not having to think about food for my family was big.
That's huge. It's huge.
It's huge. And for me, because I was in a hospital, visitors, like certain people just made me happy.
Yeah.
Things like that, just to talk, like I said, like just making me feel, sitting there with no hair and a chemo bag beeping, but just making me feel normal and talking about Bravo and all the things I like, you know, the silly things in life.
that's what it was about. That was the support. No one could physically go through cancer. I had to do it. And that's,
right.
You know, my mom would always tell me, like, just trust the process. This will pass. But you have to do the work. And that's the same thing with mental health. And that's the same thing with weight loss after postpartum. And
yes.
All of it. You have to do the work to get the result. No one can do it for you. Mm-hmm. So with cancer, that I had to take the medicine. I had to take the Rituxan, and it was called R-Epoch. And speaking about fundraising and science, like, science worked. This was a newer chemo regimen that was funded, that was able to save my life.
Yes.
And so I think the fundraising component was important because I actually benefited from it.
Yeah, I think that's something we often forget. You know, we're asked from so many directions.
Yeah.
For
donate this, donate that.
And part of you wants to give to all of it.
Sure.
And then another part of you is so desensitized to it and to see the human story. You know, you spoke earlier about how you hoped your goal was just to make it to Poppy's first birthday.
Yeah.
And now here you are.
Yeah, planning her fifth birthday.
And you've got two beautiful children and you're healthy and God willing, you stay that way. And you have this time. You might have guilt. I would argue unwarranted guilt, but I understand it nonetheless. You might have guilt and certainly sadness about the parts of motherhood that you miss. But look how much motherhood you have been given because we do things like when we are able, helping fund research. But also when we are able, we can't always do that by showing up at the hospital, by bringing just a meal,
present.
By allowing you to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about without co-opting. Yeah, and
just a safe space to...
Yes.
Talk about things or not talk about things. You have to find those people that are just your people.
Yeah.
That when you need them, you know they are there and they will listen. And vice versa. It's the same.
All right. So I have kind of two closing questions that are related. So first, I just want to know, you know, for all the moms listening who are struggling, who are feeling alone or who know that they're going in some point in the future to be in that place again like they have been in the past, what advice would you give them for, you know, I actually don't want to guide you. I don't want to say for. What advice do you have for those moms who are in places of needing support?
I think you find, I mean, I believe in medicine and I believe that there are experts to help, and you need to find your army of doctors and people that you trust to pull you out of it and to help you. And whether it's mental, it's a psychiatrist or a psychologist, or it's physical and you need, you know, a panel workup because you're unsure of something, don't be scared to speak up because it could truly save your life.
I love that. And I love that you hit on an army of doctors who you trust. I think that's such a big, big thing that we don't talk about enough, that there are a lot of ways in which getting medical care can be tricky in American society. But if you have the possibility, it's important to remember that if a doctor doesn't feel right, if you don't feel like you're being listened to, they're hopefully...
Is another.
Mm-hmm. There's someone else you can go to. I have been through three OBs, and I still don't have an OB in Atlanta who I really highly recommend.
I have a great one.
Good. Yes. I'm going to get yours then. So I think that's a really key point.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so if you could go back to right before Poppy was born, and you could give a message to past Allie from future Allie, what would you tell her?
It's making me cry. That life is going to be challenging, but you just need to trust the process because you'll make it through. Even in your darkest of days, you'll make it through.
Glennon Doyle always says, do the next right thing. Mm-hmm. Just the next right thing.
That was my dad's motto, is just what's in front of me. Mm-hmm. Today, this is what's in front of me. That's what I'm going to get through. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow is a whole new bag of worries. So
yes.
Today, I'm here. We got through this.
Yes.
And so on to the next.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been amazing.
Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah. I'm going to take that. I mean, I need to take that into my everyday. You know, this is what's in front of me today.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Undefining Motherhood podcast. It's been an honor to share this time with you. Remember, you're not just a listener. You're an essential part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, I have three simple requests for how you can help us grow. First, subscribe wherever you listened so you don't miss an episode. Second, we'd love it if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, as that's one of the most important ways we can grow and share our message and community. And finally, we'd love to hear from you. Jump over to Instagram and find us at Undefining Motherhood, where you'll see a post about this week's episode where we can continue the conversation. Thank you for being a part of the Undefining Motherhood community, where together we're making change. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.